Say, Jerry, what would go on your list of the greatest scientific advances of the 20th century?
How about the discovery of DNA, the invention of the transistor, and heavier than air flight?
Well, those are good ones, and I suspect they'd be on anyone's list. But would it surprise you to learn that the IQ test made more than a few lists of the top achievements in science during the 1900s?
Ooh, the IQ test. I'm not sure I'm smart enough to figure that out.
So let's talk about it. This is Science Matters. I'm John Henshaw.
And I'm Jerry McCoy.
In science, we're always learning how to measure new things, things that we couldn't measure before.
Things like temperature, or if you go back a lot further, even time.
Exactly. Nowadays, we take it for granted that we can measure temperature and time, but it wasn't always that way.
But we're talking about intelligence here today, right?
Right. Everyone knows that some folks are more clever than others, that they're able to solve puzzles involving words or numbers better and faster, that sort of thing.
So the idea is to measure that just like we measure temperature.
Well, that's the idea anyway. But there are lots of problems, not the least of which is figuring out just exactly what it is that we're trying to measure.
So it's not quite as simple as measuring temperature.
Definitely not. Let's go back to the year 1899 and visit the psychologist Alfred Binet at his clinic in Paris. Binet was trying to develop a system to identify children in need of special help in the classroom.
The kind of kids that we would refer to today as having learning disabilities or special needs kids.
Right. In the system that Binet developed, kids were given tasks of increasing difficulty until they finally got to things that they couldn't do.
Well, so what kind of tasks are we talking about?
Well, the simplest tasks were things like following a lighted match with your eyes, or naming different parts of the body, or repeating a three-digit number. And some of the more difficult tasks were finding words that rhymed with each other, or repeating seven-digit numbers.
So the idea is to find the most difficult task that each kid can do.
Binet tested thousands of kids, and through painstaking study, he figured out what the average child could do at any age.
I see. So the average 10-year-old can repeat a seven-digit number, but the average 8-year-old can't.
Yeah, something like that. Binet's goal was to determine what he called the child's mental age. So a 10-year-old that can only complete the tasks of the average 8-year-old would have a mental age of 8.
And this is how we identified the kids in need of special help in the classroom?
Exactly. And the system worked pretty darn well until.
Ooh, sounds like the story's about to turn dark.
Well, kind of. Binet knew that he was playing with fire here. So he wrote out a list of specific do's and don'ts for his mental age test that he had developed.
Let me guess, one of the rules is that the Binet system was only to be used for testing children. Don't use this on adults.
Very good. He also warned against using his system for ranking so-called normal children. It was only for finding the kids in need of remedial instruction.
Anything else?
Yes. Perhaps Binet's most important warning was that his system did not measure anything innate or unalterable about a child. It was merely a snapshot of a child's mental development at a given point in time.
So, would it be fair to say that we ignored Binet's warnings?
In spades. But something else happened not long after Binet's death, which made it easier to ignore those warnings. And that was the development of what we now call the IQ or intelligence quotient.
So, Binet didn't come up with that himself.
No, Binet was measuring the mental age of children and comparing that to their chronological age. But in 1912, a guy named Wilhelm Stern came along and had the idea to divide those two numbers.
Divide the child's mental age by his or her chronological age.
Exactly, and then multiply by 100.
Okay, so let me do the math here. Let's say that we've got a 10-year-old child with a mental age of 12. That would be 12 divided by 10, then multiplied by 100. That's 120.
And that's the child's IQ.
So what sort of problems did that create?
Well, for one thing, it made it much easier to apply the system to adults. Mental age doesn't make much sense for adults, but since IQ is a unitless ratio, you can apply it to anyone.
So now everybody's got an IQ, not just kids.
Right. And then in the 1930s, along came machine-graded tests.
Oh, the old ones where you color in the circle with a number two pencil?
Right again. And that made it super easy to apply intelligence testing to all sorts of folks. The U.S. Army, for example, started using IQ tests for things like identifying officer candidates.
And eventually, folks decided that this number, this IQ, was something that you were born with and that you couldn't change, like the color of your eyes.
Yes, and that was the last of Binet's warnings that we ignored.
But didn't we begin the story by saying that IQ is one of the greatest scientific achievements of the last century?
Oh, we did indeed.
Well, I'm a little confused. It seems like this is mostly a tale of woe.
Well, it's definitely a mixed bag. The great difficulty in intelligence testing is separating that which is innate from that which has been acquired over time.
Nature versus nurture, if you will.
Precisely. Binet believed that intelligence varied from one child to the next, but that it was not something that was innate or unalterable. Gradually, after more than a few wrong turns, educators and psychologists seem to have come back around to that way of thinking.
So intelligence testing has contributed to our understanding of the human mind and how it works.
In some really profound ways. And that's a role it continues to play to this day. From the University of Tulsa, this is Science Matters. I'm John Henshaw.
And I'm Jerry McCoy.